Hello.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
That's not going to work. I'll swear if I can't stop it.
Should we come out and come back in?
Yeah. Yeah, let's come back out and come back in. I'll send you another.
Because that delay's ridiculous.
God.
Yeah, sure.
Hello, you are listening to Off Radar, It's a Movie Podcast. I'm James Smith, a professional film and video editor.
I'm James Etock, a freelance writer and illustrator specialising in 1980s cartoons.
And I'm Neil Brock, aka Nige, the man with two names, former film journalist and currently working in the games industry.
Each week, one of us picks a movie that all three of us either haven't seen in many years or in some cases haven't seen at all.
We each watch the chosen movie, return to the microphone and let you all know exactly what we thought of it.
He desperately needs her to survive.
It's sort of handled some incredibly delicate topics incredibly well.
I will never watch this again. What was that?
If you fancy joining in and suggesting a movie for us to watch, why not tweet us at Off Radar Podcast
or email us on offradarpod@gmail.com.
If you like what you hear, please subscribe, share, and by all means, leave a review.
For now, strap in, turn the volume up, and let's go
Off Radar.
I'm James Smith.
Let me just go and change my shirt.
All right. Hello. And welcome back to Off Radar. My name is James Smith, and today, as always, I am joined by James Etock.
Hello. I don't know why I waved then. Hello. I waved for some reason.
He waved. And I was just about to say, and Neil Brock, who we call Nige, but unfortunately not. Nige is ill with the flu, tucked up in bed, probably watching lots of films. But yeah, he's too ill to be here today. So for the first time, we have not got him here. But we thought the show must go on for one episode. So we're not going to do a film out of respect to Nige. But we are going to talk.
Like he's dead.
God bless his soul. But we are instead going to... Oh, God. Yeah, we do a eulogy as well. But we are going to talk a little bit about what we've been watching on TV. And nowadays, TV is film. You know, TV's film over 7 to 10 episodes. It's evolved so much since, I don't know, The Sopranos or somewhere. So here we are. We're gonna have a little chat about what we recommend to each other, what we recommend to you guys. Some of them, to begin with, I don't know about you, Etock, but my ones won't have spoilers.
Yeah, I'm looking at my things. My things are just a kind of general overview. For the most part.
Great.
I'm not going to go. And then they're all turned out to be time traveling robots. And it's like, oh, you've gone and blown it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, you really have. The first thing that I want to talk about is a brand new YouTube channel that I've been watching. And it's an awesome YouTube channel that I've found. A good friend of mine set it up.
Is this my channel? Are you promoting my channel?
Yes,
without me knowing?
I'm promoting your channel. And it's called Serial Geek TV. It's presented by James Etock, who is here now. And I thought
that's
this would be a good opportunity for you to sell it to our lovely listeners. But it's a fabulous 80s animation kids cartoon. And Etock dives into the shows. Etock, I don't know, I've put you on the spot a little bit here, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I'm literally the worst seller of anything I do. I'm like, it's just this, you know. Yeah, so I started this channel, and it's a kind of in-depth look, different subjects. Each week, I go into a different cartoon and kind of break it down and look at a specific aspect of it or something. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Like, I've done looks at certain... scenes in like something like He-Man or Banana Man. I did a Banana Man video. Inspector Gadget, my most recent one. Ninja Turtles. There's a lot of basically any cartoon of the 80s I plan on covering over the next however long this channel runs for, hopefully years. And yeah, it's an in-depth look with someone who actually has a vested interest in this. I pretty much write all my own scripts, you know. It's one of those things where, you know, I years ago I did a magazine called Serial Geek, as in breakfast cereal, not serial killer. But I did a magazine called Serial Geek, and whenever you tell people about it, they'd go like, oh, that's nice. Like, I make my own magazine. Oh, that's nice. How very... It's almost like they pat you on the head, like, there, well done. And then they'd see the magazine and be like, oh my God, this is a quality product. It's like, well, yeah, of course it is. I put everything into it. And it's the same with the YouTube channel. I think you tell people you're doing a YouTube channel, they're like, oh, that's cute. How sweet. And then it's like, they see it and it's like, oh, you're actually making like quality content. It's like, yeah, it's not a video just shot on the iPhone wobbling about me going, oh, welcome, there's a video about a turtle and the shredder. It's like, no, I'm actually making content about this stuff that I know. So yeah, if you want like a weekly dose of Saturday morning cartoon goodness, just watch the videos because they is good. There you go.
Nicely said. And I will say you don't have to be a mega fan of these cartoons to get enjoyment out of them. Some of the cartoons I've not seen, some of them I have, and I found them really interesting just going back, and they definitely kind of help you relive some moments in your childhood, like Banana Man and Inspector Gadget, the most recent episodes. So yeah, I strongly recommend you go back and check it out. It's Serial Geek TV, right, Etok?
That is correct. Thank you, James. Why the changes were made to the character of Inspector Gadget will probably always remain a mystery. No doubt Deke thought it would be better to have an incompetent lead character than a competent one. Peter Saunder was the head writer on the series and was not involved in the pilot, with Hayward taking a step back from the series. This change may have affected the writing of the character. Of course, one of the most probable reasons is that our dear Inspector bore more of a resemblance to a certain Inspector Clouseau, and, much like Gadget, he too had had a lobotomy of sorts.
So we started a series a few nights ago, actually, and it's...
When you say we, you need to specify.
Yeah, we... No, that's how I talk about myself.
oh, no!
No, me and my wife started a series a few nights ago, and it is out on Channel 4 at the moment, and it's called Somewhere Boy. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Etok.
I have not seen this.
It's directed by Alexandra Brodsky and Alex Winkler, written by Pete Jackson, not Peter Jackson, that would be a different show. And it stars Lewis Gribben, Samuel Bottomley, Rory Keenan, Lisa McGrillis, and Jonathan Myers. And basically, we're four episodes in, and it's a British drama comedy about a young boy called Danny. And when he was a baby, his mother was basically killed in a hit and run. So his dad locked him away in this kind of rural countryside house and told him that monsters were outside. So the story centers around kind of Danny as he's grown up and his integration back into society as an adult, while using flashbacks to kind of show his upbringing. It's a really sweet moving show. The episodes are 30 minutes max. It's about acceptance, it's about grief, it's about family, love, coming of age. And for me, I thought it was one of the most original British dramas that I've seen in a long time so far. And I think the young guys in this, Lewis Gribben and Samuel Bottomley, are exceptional. And I wouldn't be surprised if they get picked up for kind of other stuff in the future. But yeah, it's really surprised me, this show. It's very raw. It's shot beautifully. And I definitely recommend you guys check it out. That's Somewhere Boy on Channel 4.
It's always been out there. But if we can hide, then maybe one day they'll go and we'll get our chance to start again.
Please, no!
Just be nice to him. He'll settle in.
What, is he staying?
You two are going to be as thick as thieves.
His mum died and his dad sort of kept him inside.
Maybe I could meet your friend sometime.
You'd have to leave the house first, wouldn't you?
I need to see the man who did this to me. Because I don't know what I'm doing. I can't understand any of it.
You know there aren't any monsters, really, don't you?
Your dad wouldn't lie to me.
So yeah, Ito, what have you got for me? What have you been watching?
So Smith, what I have been watching. No, I take you back to the start of 2022. This year, in fact. Oh. And I was living in my lovely plush apartment in Canary Wharf, 30 floors up, looking over the Thames. Beautiful, beautiful view. So yeah, a show I watched, of all places, on Disney Plus was Pam and Tommy, which was the series about the love story, as it were, between Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee Jones. And I found it to be an utterly gripping series that I thought, hey, I'll watch a few episodes and see how it goes. But it was one of those where I binge watched what was available, and then I found myself literally to the point of, even though I had the Disney Plus app, I was trying to illegally find streams of the episodes before they'd gone out. It's like, because I really wanted to see the next episode, I was like, I need to see it, I need to see it. It's like, just wait a few more hours. And obviously, I'm sure it's based in fact, but obviously there's a lot of you know, dramatization, and it's not even been endorsed by either Pamela Anderson or Tommy Lee Jones, to my knowledge. But it tells the story of how they met, you know, how their lives went, progressed, and then what happened when the sex tape was leaked and the fallout from that. The acting in it, it's got Lily James as Pamela Anderson, who is phenomenal. Because you think, how does someone replicate Pamela Anderson? I'm not just talking, I'm not talking like aesthetically, I'm not talking physically, I'm talking that look, that kind of pouty, you know, glamour, like 90s glam look. And the makeup department themselves deserve all the awards in Hollywood, because they made Lily James, if you look at photos of Lily James, you think, how can she be Pamela Anderson? Yet you watch this show and you forget that you're looking at an actress playing Pamela Anderson. It's that she's that good. Does the voice, the mannerisms, everything. And Sebastian Stan as Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones himself, you know, the man, the musician, he's almost a parody of himself anyway, the parody of a 90s rock guy, or I should say 80s to 90s rock guy with Motley Crue. So Sebastian Stan can play that in a certain way. You can send that up. I think, I'm not saying, obviously you have to have talent to play that role, but I think you don't have to be too careful with it, because all you have to do is, well, Tommy Lee Jones was factually a bit of a dickhead. So all you have to do is kind of amp. You can, you know what I mean? You can overdo scenes and it'll be like, oh, that's probably what he was like anyway. The more that kind of goes into this, like how the sex tape was stolen, how it leaked in the very earliest days of the internet. So we're talking like late 95, early 96, which is when I was online. And the idea of seeing a video online back then was, I remember like one of the this is no word of a lie, one of the first videos I downloaded from the internet was a tiny MOV, a little QuickTime file, and it was a video of a live performance of Busta Rhymes. This is no word of a lie, on stage doing...
I thought you were going to say that the act then, the actual video.
No, I should be so lucky, because that kind of thing to find was really rare, obviously. But and that to me was like, oh my God, and it took you like an hour to download this, you know, 2 megabyte clip or whatever. It's ridiculous. So they really delve into that side of things. It sounds weird. It's like, how can this be fascinating? And maybe you do have to have some sort of fascination with the early days of the internet, but they talk about how the Pam and Tommy sex tape changed almost like the face of the internet at that point. What this series does really well, I thought, was when the sex tape is out, which is like quite a few episodes in, when that finally leaks, they really show... And it sounds like a no-brainer, but they really show the difference between how something like that, even to this day, is received by society. So guys would look at it and be like, "Way," you know, they even show scenes where Tommy Lee is in a bar and some, you know, I think he has a fight with some guy, but people are like, oh, Tommy Lee's a legend because he had sex with Pamela Anderson. Whereas Pamela Anderson is looked at as a slut. And it's like, we're both on that tape. And the fallout from that, and the way they deal with that, even with their dialogue between Lily James and Sebastian Stan, is amazing, because they really do just really delve into that, what it's like, what the difference is between one and the other. Pamela Anderson's career was pretty much ended. She was trying to break through into Hollywood. And they say that, I think that's, again, a no-brainer. It's obvious that that video would have tainted her. Whereas Tommy Lee Jones became the guy that fucked Pamela Anderson. It's crazy the way that thing worked out. But yeah, I would highly recommend the series. It's easily, I think, one of the best of 2022. Well, from what I've seen. I've seen quite a few shows. But yeah, one of my on my list of recommendations, Pam and Tommy.
Every second that passes, this tape could be spreading.
Baby, we will get it back. It's not a big deal to me. I'm on that tape, same as you.
No, not like me, or not.
Here we go.
What the hell is this?
On that, actually, I was going to say one thing. I recently watched, have you seen those Ruby Wax videos where she goes back and like rewatches old videos of her interviewing people? Well, one of them was the Pamela Anderson one, and it shows like loads of clips from the original show, but also it kind of interviews Ruby Wax and her reflections on how she treated Pamela Anderson and stuff. It's really interesting because, you know, the way she talked about her at the time was quite I don't know, like
derogatory.
Yeah, exactly, derogatory. But now she was like, actually, you know, she was a lovely person and really honest. And yeah, it's really interesting seeing her kind of reflect on how she interviewed people. But yeah,
One thing before I forget, something you brought up in a voice message that I completely forgot to address, one of your voice notes. We were talking about shows. Yeah, so I watched the first series of it, really enjoyed it, but I heard such rubbish things about the second series, and then you said in your message Russian Doll.
Yes, yeah.
So I the trailer for it popped up the other week, and I was like, huh. And then I thought, no, I've heard so many bad things about it. I thought, how bad can it be? Maybe I'll check it out at some point. But you were literally like,
I really enjoyed the first series.
It was was great.
Real surprise, like for anyone listening, like the Russian Doll. Basically, it's another time loop story, but this woman is stuck at a party, and it's kind of going over and over again. And it's an excellent first series. I'd recommend people go and watch it, especially on the series we've done. Groundhog Day before, I think we've talked about, and we've also talked about Palm Springs. So if you like those kind of things, then give it a watch. Are you going into your own little time?
Why am I breaking up? I don't know. I'm literally not doing anything. Look.
On the Russian Doll thing, series two, I was... it's just so bad. And I turned it off after maybe three episodes. Well, she goes back in time and kind of like... It becomes a bit... like quantum leapy in that, you know, respect, like kind of changing time. But the thing is, because she's kind of like goes into like her mother's body or something when she was young and pregnant, it's just really bad. Give it a watch, but I wouldn't recommend it.
While we're on the subject of not talking about the shows we're not talking about, I started watching Squid Game.
Yes, yeah, I did watch that, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, you got to watch it. I'm kind of like about four episodes in. I'm like, I'm not feeling it at the moment, to be honest, which is weird. Maybe it gets better or something, but, you know, don't get me wrong, it's like, oh, yeah, cool, but it's not making me go, oh, my God, I got to watch the next episode. Like, I watched the first, and I gave it a few days before I even watched the second, but, yeah, I'm not being drawn in by it in the way I thought I would be.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, we watched it and, you know, I enjoyed it, but there was so much hype around it. And I think it's definitely been done before with stuff like, you know, Battle Royale and... Hunger Games and stuff like that. And, you know, it's yet another Korean, story or film about, you know, class and poverty, which is fine. But there just seems to be a lot of them, and it's obviously a massive... kind of commentary on where South Korea is right now, or was when these were being filmed. So yeah, it's interesting. I kind of enjoyed it, but I get your point. So yeah, the next one I wanted to recommend is something I did probably voice message you about, actually, Etok. It's called How To with John Wilson. And this series actually came out in 2020. It's a HBO show, but has recently just been picked up by the BBC in the UK, so it's on iPlayer. And when I first turned it on, I honestly thought I was about to watch like a how-to video. But this is anything but. It's a documentary series in which John Wilson, who is this kind of anxious New Yorker, and he tries to navigate everyday things in the search for self-discovery. So I'd kind of describe it as a bit of a kind of Louis Theroux-ish thing, but it's much more arty, with everything being represented through random visual filming kind of imaginations. So if he's talking about something, he'll be filming loads of New York, but it's not the kind of New York you're used to seeing. It'll be dogs pooing or scaffolding or, you know, like all these things. It sounds incredibly weird and incredibly random, and it is, but it also has this kind of profound, thought-provoking kind of rabbit holes that he goes down, and he meets some really interesting and eccentric people. And some of which, you know, he kind of forms bonds with, like the landlord who is downstairs below. Describing this sounds bizarre, but, you know, they're, again, yeah, it's another short episode, 30 minute each episode. You can pick any episode of, you know, as you like. But an episode that I'd recommend watching is How To Find A Spot, as in a driving spot. And he talks about how to find a driving spot in New York. So it's so funny, but it's also, you know, it goes into these kind of like very thought-provoking, hilarious moments. And I'd say it's really bingeable, and it's like something you probably have never seen before. So really original. And yeah, I definitely recommend you guys check this one out, as How To with John Wilson in the UK, available on both series 1 and 2, available on iPlayer. And then in the US, I believe HBO, so whatever the HBO kind of equivalent is.
I spent a lot of time walking around New York, trying to find the answers to some of life's biggest questions. Sometimes I talk to people that I meet out in public and ask them for their advice. Other times I'll just open up a door and see what's on the other side. And every now and then I leave town for a couple of days and explore what other cities have to offer. But at the end of the day, I always come right back. It's kind of like that show Planet Earth, but if it was only in New York and David Attenborough was forced to film everything himself.
My next recommendation is The Boys Season 3. I thought I'd come in with Season 3 as I've seen the first two.
Before you go ahead, I've only seen Series 1, so be careful.
No, there's really not going to be anything about spoilers in this. For those that don't know, The Boys are kind of a unique twist on the superhero genre. It's basically, I would describe it as, you know, what if people with superpowers were all dicks? I'm pretty sure that is probably the series bible for this show, is that. It's like, you know, everybody, you know, there are send-ups of your classic characters like Superman and Wonder Woman and Aquaman and stuff like that. But it's basically what, you know, power corrupts. And what I love about The Boys is when you compare it to something like the Watchmen, you know, the Alan Moore comic book and then the Zack Snyder movie, Watchmen was very much about, you know, here's a fresh new take on the superhero genre. We're looking at superheroes as government assassins and how they could be, you know, how they could cause the downfall of the world. Because up until that point, superheroes, you know, you had supervillains, but it had often been something that superheroes were often seen as the Superman, or, you know, and then you got the Batman, Spider-Man, all this. It was all these wonderful characters, colorful characters, but there was hope. Whenever you read those stories, there was always a great deal of hope. Don't get me wrong, like, all these characters suffered loss and, you know, went through depression and all these other things because they were written by adults writing bloody good stories. But for the most part, these stories were all surrounded by hope, hopefulness, you know, to be a better person. Whereas Watchmen was one of the first kind of stories to present superheroes as very flawed characters. what The Boys does so beautifully, it takes that and, you know, I don't know, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but amps it up by 10. And what you end up with is a series of, for the most part, really dislikable characters. And I remember when I'd never read The Boys comic book, I remember seeing it and its art style really didn't appeal to me. It looked quite juvenile at times. Oh, the series, what the series does so wonderfully, as I'm sure the comic book did to an extent, is you present the superheroes for the most part as the bad guy, you know, the superpowered, the soups, mm-hmm. as they call them in the series, as the bad guys. And the good guys are a bunch of, you know, again, dickheads, really. You know, they have good intentions, but they go to quite horrific means to, you know, their kind of modus operandi is we want to eliminate superheroes, we want to eliminate the soups, regardless of if they're nice people. What The Watchmen couldn't have done at the time, because The Watchmen was written in the 80s during the kind of Reagan era, so it was all about, you know, the Cold War for the most part. What The Boys beautifully does, and again, the comic didn't do this because it's modern, because we're, you know, 10, 15 years since the comic book was made. What the TV series does is show how, if this were all real, how superheroes could utterly exploit social media. And that's one of the best things about, especially series two. No spoilers, of course, but it's just how, even it's a criticism on or a critique on social media in general. You can really use it to create your own narrative. I think it taps into a lot of the whole Trump thing about fake news, and you even get that, you know, that line said a few times. And there's something like I like to call, you know, or the media likes to call superhero fatigue, which is, you know, we've had all the MCU movies, blah, blah, blah. I partially believe that, but also I don't believe that as well, because what I believe if people look at the box office numbers and go, well, you know, the superhero numbers, superhero films aren't doing as well. My criticism is, well, because they're not very good anymore. You did have this wonderful era where you had your Robert Downey Jr.'s, your Chris Evans, your Scarlett Johansson's, all these wonderful actors that were in all these great films. Gwyneth Paltrow, I could, you know, list goes on. And then it's almost like it peaked, it became too much. And once the movie hit its kind of moment with Endgame, the whole MCU, it's like Endgame, there's the story we've been building to for 10 years. We've hit that moment. After that, all the films are now just going like almost directionless. So I've like, and even superhero films in general, years ago I'd been desperate to see a Black Adam movie starring Dwayne the Rock Johnson. I saw the trailer, I was like, nah, I'm all right. My mate was like, do you fancy going to see it? I was like, nah, not really.
Yeah,
my point about all of this is that all it takes is a good show. And I think The Boys is proof that there is no such thing as superhero fatigue, because you can make a really good, successful TV series. And The Boys, season after season, has proven itself, you know, critically, to be a bloody good series.
There's something wrong with Homelander. There's something broken. He's lost his fucking mind.
So the series I'm going to talk about is Under the Banner of Heaven, which has been out on Disney Plus, created by Dustin Lance Black, and it stars Andrew Garfield, Sam Worthington, Daisy Edgar Jones, who you might recognize from Normal People, amongst other things. And there's a whole host more of people. It's got a real ensemble kind of true crime pace. And Andrew Garfield plays a detective, and he's investigating a brutal murder of a mother and child. Now, Garfield's character, and most of the characters in this film, are part of the Mormon Church. And as Garfield kind of digs deeper into the case, he starts to question his own faith, and what the, you know, what the kind of fundamentalist Mormons have had to do with this. So far I'm 4 episodes into the series and I'm really enjoying it. It's a fascinating look at, you know, the community, the church, and it doesn't really paint them in a good light, to be honest. And then, as well as this detective story, the creators are also using a series of flashbacks which kind of showcase one family, the Lafferty family's life, and kind of, you know, their works within the church and the community, and their family are kind of linked to the story. I'd say the pace is quite slow. You have to be patient, but it's really compelling. But yeah, like most things right now, it's incredibly well shot. But at the heart of this film, half of this series, some excellent character development and clever writing. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where the rest of the episodes go. I'd definitely recommend people check it out and give it a go.
A woman and her 15-month-old child were murdered in their home. We are asking the public for their help. We aren't a community that usually locks its doors. So for now, we feel it's prudent to err on the side of caution.
The evidence points to things and to beliefs that I have only ever heard whisperings about.
I don't go digging in the past. And neither should you.
So, Smith, the third of my choices of TV shows is called The Offer, which was sold as a dramatization, a drama series about the making of The Godfather. And I was like, I've never been one that touts The Godfather as, it's one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. I saw The Godfather years ago and I was like, I get why people like rave about it, but to me it's never really, you know, held my attention, or sorry, it's never been on like a pedestal as I've placed other films in my life. But I understand why people love it so much, because, you know, for its time and everything as well, what it did in terms of filmmaking, as this series so wonderfully explores, was so very different. Because prior to The Godfather, kind of gangster films were that, you know, very tired kind of cliche of, you know, Bugsy Malone, yeah, like meh kind of thing, you know, all that business. Or it's a very, you know, you think of old black and white gangster movies where the old gangster boys like, get him boys, you know, shoot him, pump him full of lead or something, or, you know, you never get me to talk coppers, all that kind of stuff. Whereas this was presenting the gangsters and the mob as a very powerful force, which obviously they were and possibly still are. The Offer, what is so brilliant about it? One, I mean, the cast is, it's one of those shows where looking at the cast list, it may not make you go, oh my goodness, but when you watch it, it's so strong. Like every performance is rather phenomenal. Like standouts, my boy, he's slowly becoming, I'd say he actually is one of my favorite actors currently working in Hollywood, Miles Teller. What an incredible human being, actor. He's just like, you know, when we started doing this podcast, I'd never seen Whiplash, and that was one of your recommended films of the I think it was the 2010s. I was like, okay, I'll give Whiplash a watch. Watched it, and I was like, oh my goodness, he's amazing. I mean, it's an amazing film, Whiplash. It would definitely be on my top 10, if not top 5 list for the 2010s, if I'd seen it prior to us doing that list. But an incredible movie. And he's amazing in it. And the more I see of him in movies, we've got, you know, I think we've got one coming up, Top Gun Maverick. He's just a screen presence. He takes me back to like those actors where they appear on screen, you're like, oh, it's this guy, you know. And in this series, he plays Al Ruddy, who was the kind of a young producer in Hollywood trying to get his first, you know, movie out there. Mm. And he comes across this script, The Godfather, or he comes across a book and like a script's in production. And basically he backs it. But obviously, you know, it's a beautiful story of up against all odds. And Miles Teller, you know, just completely goes into this role. And I'll just quickly talk about the other actors. There's Juno Temple, who I can't say I've known much of her work, but no. She plays his assistant. And I use the term assistant very, very lightly, because she plays his assistant, but she's forthright, she's opinionated, she's basically his backbone in the series. And her presence is fantastic. There's an actor named Matthew Good, again, a guy I'd be like, oh, I recognize him, but I wouldn't know his name. But he plays the big Hollywood, the kind of the head of the studio, Paramount at the time. He's amazing in it. He's amazing. You've got kind of a, I'd say a smaller role, but Giovanni Ribisi, you know, who we know from Saving Private Ryan and
everything,
so many other series, so many films. Also, the honor of being Phoebe's younger brother in Friends. But he plays a mob boss in this, so he's kind of like, he's, you know, done a bit of a Christian Bale and fattened himself up and stuff. Here's one for you, Colin Hanks. Oh. He's like one of the heads of the studio in Paramount. Another actor in it is a guy called Bern Gorman, who, again, you'd be like, who? And then you see him and you're like, oh God, I've seen him in so many things. British actor, I believe. But what the series does so beautifully, it just charts the course of this movie being made. And you think, well, what's the story to tell there? But the story is fantastic. You know, you think about development and production is always a fascinating part of any film. With this, you've got all these personalities involved, you know, people being fired, then rehired, then fired again. And from what I understand, like, yeah, this may be a dramatization. So the script is probably, you know, a lot of, you know, conversations in normal life aren't as dramatic as they are on film. So I'm sure there's a lot of leeway in terms of how the script is written. But I'd say probably from what I've read, most, if not all of it, is based on facts. I thought this to be a wonderful companion piece to The Godfather. Like, if you've seen The Godfather, I think this is makes a fabulous viewing. But also, like I say, I hadn't seen The Godfather in a long time. Watched it, really bloody enjoyed it. I would happily watch this, and I probably will at some point watch this series again.
The Godfather is bringing us too many problems.
You want me to take care of it?
Gangster movies are dead.
This is not just some gangster film.
We need someone who understands Italians. For instance, Ford Coppola. He's got a great vision.
We have to put this in the picture.
A scene about gangsters arguing over sauce?
No. A scene about family arguing over sauce.
I contacted our third wheel in this thing, and Nige has left us a voice note, which I've not listened to yet. So I'm going to attempt to play it down the microphone to you, Etok.
I'm really not well.
Given that I'm currently in the middle of having flu and desperately trying to recover from doing so, I've actually had a bit more time than I expected to watch some of the sort of TV shows that perhaps my partner is less interested in watching. So I kind of stumbled across a couple of things I've actually really enjoyed. So the first of which was The Witcher, starring Henry Cavill, which some of you may already be familiar with as a sort of Polish fantasy book that was actually converted into an extraordinarily popular computer game series. It's essentially about a monster hunter called Geralt of Rivia, who struggles to find his place in the world, is quite distant from people, goes around again, sort of slaying monsters, and finds himself in extraordinary situations where he becomes a guardian, perhaps, that he does not want to be. And there's also quite a substantial side story about another character called Yennefer, who is a sort of pigsty girl who essentially has magical powers and joins the Brotherhood of Mages. So when I go on to say something like the Brotherhood of Mages, you can understand this is very much a fantasy-based TV show. I actually tried to watch it a couple of years prior, because it actually started in 2019. And for whatever reason, I didn't really get on very well with the first episode. I was a bit wary of it being a computer game adaptation as well, because traditionally, certainly in film, they've not generally worked very well at all. And also, yeah, being a bit of a Game of Thrones clone, perhaps. I mean, I'm familiar with said that the TV show, but I did later read that it's more based on those original stories, that sort of the Polish fantasy stories, rather than the game. Then, although Henry Cavill, like, bizarrely, is a huge gamer himself, and so incredibly heavily sought after this role. Now, you may recognise him more as Superman, of course, but he's a really, really incredible specimen as a human being. Like, British, of course, as well. And aside from kind of the Superman films, he was really good in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as well. But in this, he is absolutely incredible, and he's from reading sort of background on it, he's absolutely devoted himself to the role. And one of the things they said about the casting as well was like no Game of Thrones actors. So they really wanted to separate themselves from that. But it looks incredible. I was in a bit of a fever dream, certainly for the first half of the first series. And there were certainly bits where I was scratching my head. But the longer it went on, the more I got into it. I absolutely smashed through both series that are currently available, with the next series due in 2023. So they seem to drop it once every couple of years. And yeah, I'll definitely be along for the ride. I heartily recommend it. So yeah, and it's I think it's available on Netflix. I said next series 2023. Very enjoyable. Not one necessarily for kids. And yeah, heartily recommend and enjoyed. I'll leave it at that before my throat gives up. Hopefully that's useful.
I've heard tales of your kind, Witcher. You're a mutant, created by magic, roaming the continent.
We don't want your kind here.
Hunting monsters for a price. I thought you'd have fangs or horns or something.
I had them filed down.
Poor Nige. Oh, bless him. Yeah, so
he does sound in a bad
poor
way.
Poor Nige has got flu at the moment. So, yeah, The Witcher, I've not seen that. So not something I've really been that interested in, if I'm being honest, just because of, like, Game of Thrones. I don't know about you, but for me, like, I kind of liked it, but I didn't love it as much as everybody else did. I kind of was watching it just to be a part of conversation. And The Witcher is just one of those ones that the kind of fantasy thing, it's just never really interested me. But maybe I'll give that a go.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate Nige talking about the physicality of Henry Cavill's form over and over again. I think that's the reason he was watching it. Not there's anything wrong with that, because when I went to see Man of Steel starring Henry Cavill, I can't say his name, Henry Cavill, there we go, yeah. I'm saying it right now, Henry Cavill, when I went to see that first Man of Steel film, I came out of the cinema, the only image I ever posted of it was a shot of when he's got a beard and he's kind of, I think he's swam from somewhere or something, and he's walking onto like a grassy kind of thing in someone's backyard, and he's just got his top off, he's got a beard, and he looks like a superhero. It's ridiculous. His physique is ludicrous. So yeah, I mean, if I was to watch the series, it sounds like I'd just be all up for Henry Cavill's physique. So yeah, which I, yeah, you know, he's a good looking dude, no doubt, no diggity, no doubt.
give it a go. So yeah, guys, let us know what you guys are watching at the moment. I know this is a bit of a new format for us, but yeah, we thought we'd try this out while poor little Nige is ill. Yeah, and we've got a few things that I'm going to go away and watch that Etok and Nige have recommended. And if you've got anything, email us on offradarpod@gmail.com. Tweet us at offradarpodcast. You can find us on Facebook. And we will see you next time with a film podcast.
That works. I think that's mostly English.